Good morning, and thank you for listening to us this Sunday morning on News Radio 930 WFMD. I'm Troy Skinner. I'm the pastor of Household of Faith in Christ, online at householdoffaithinchrist.com, and I'm the host of The Faith Debate, joined this week, as is becoming pretty normal now, David Forsey. He's the pastor of the Whack-A-Mole Church. I call it that because they meet at different locations, depending on, it's a house church, and whichever family wants to host, they take turns, and it's a rotisserie league. Is that better than Whack-A-Mole Church, the Rotisserie League Church? I don't know. You had some highfalutin name for it at one point. It was something like the Greater Potomac, I don't know, yada yada.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, that's
a good one.
Yeah, so good I remembered it really well. And Daniel Razvi is here. He's here representing the church that meets at Imran's house. He's one of the pastors there, and he's also, they have a ministry called Conquered by Love Ministries online at conqueredbylove.org. So today, here's what we're talking about. In light of what's been happening in the Middle East, has there been something going on in the Middle East the last year, year and a half, something like that? I can't really remember.
Last couple thousand years
or something, yeah. In the Middle East. I don't know. Anyway, something's going on in the Middle East, and there's also been some chatter.
By the time this airs, there may not be a Middle East.
Might not be a planet, right? Because there's been more chatter about World War III since like the 1970s and 80s.
And rapture and all that. Everybody's saying.
There's the Ukraine thing.
You're
and
saying this might not even air, Daniel?
That's right. We might meet him in the air before this airs.
Well,
I don't subscribe to that eschatology, but
maybe God will bless us with being able to listen to this in glory.
Wow. Something as imperfect as this show, I think that'll be allowed.
So anyway, there is a lot of buzz about, you know, eventual World War III or ongoing hot skirmishes and wars taking place right now. And speaking of the Middle East, right, there were civilian casualties back on October 7th of 2023 when the whole thing kind of lit really hot again. And then in response, Israel retaliated, and in their retaliations over the past months, there have been more civilian casualties, and it raises that age-old question, is it okay for us to
and
be...
And by that, you mean there was more than one civilian casualty on both sides, but many people, I think, many of our listeners would probably rightly point out that there does not seem to be any sort of comparison at all between the level of destruction and rampage that's going on from one side or the other.
Yeah, and I'm not getting into the minutiae of it because I'm not framing this as a, Palestine. People get offended by that thing. By the way, this is a quick aside. You guys, if you disagree, I'll write it down. It'll be a separate show topic for another day. But this line that people who think an awful lot like me and a lot of issues say, Palestine's not even a real place. It is. Stop it. It makes us sound silly when we say it's not a real place. Just because
it's Israel. I would call it Israel.
Just because there wasn't a Palestine 5,000 years ago, there wasn't a United States of America 5,000 years ago. United States of America is a real place. Palestine's a real place.
Israel was renamed Palestine by the Romans as an insult to Jews. That's where the name came from. So it is Israel. It always has been.
But
I would fight you on that. Yeah.
Okay. Well, I'll make a note. Palestine, because I.
All it takes is for you to say, don't fight me on this, for me to fight you on it.
Just tell David Palestine is a real place.
It's similar to the, talking about Israel and stuff, it's similar to the discussions I had with people a number of years ago when there was all the talk about whether or not the United States Embassy should be moved or not in Israel. And I supported that move, not for political reasons, but for logic reasons. It'd be like somebody saying, I know the United States considers Washington, D.C. to be their nation's capital, but we don't like the United States, so we're going to put our embassy in
New York City,
New York or Houston or something, and pretend that New York or Houston are the capital of the country when clearly Washington, D.C. is the capital. So let's just have our embassy where the capital is. Let's not pretend it's someplace else. Let's just put it where it is, Let's not get worried about what the political ramifications are. By the way, all those supposed political ramifications.
Never happened.
Never materialized. Well, that
was
figure.
That was the whole thing about that was the whole thing about when Nixon went to China, right? It was a famous phrase, right? Nixon went to China because he was the first president to acknowledge that mainland China was now being ruled by another country or another government, but still was to be called China. We had been pretending for 30 years or whatever that, you know, the original Chinese government, which had relocated to Taiwan, was the real China, and these other ones were just an invading force that would someday be destroyed, so we would always have our embassies in Taiwan, and we would call them China. And then Nixon changed that. He called Beijing China, and Taiwan is Taiwan. Of course, China, for their part, says Taiwan is still part of China also. And by the time this airs, maybe it will be. But I view that a little bit differently, because countries' boundaries change all the time, but I view it very differently than I would the Israel thing, because Israel is a country that the boundaries were determined by God and announced as such, and so I have much stronger feelings about the specific boundary lines of Israel.
Well, I believe in a sovereign God, so I believe every nation that's ever existed has had its boundaries determined by God.
Well, but also that he bothered to tell us what they were is maybe not the...
Anyway, we're way off track what we wanted to be talking about. We're 6 minutes into the show here.
Oh, sorry.
So basically the question of just war theory. Is there ever...
Would it be better to use Ukraine and Russia for our example?
Daniel. Sure.
Okay. Yeah, okay.
Sure.
Generally speaking, do any of the three of us think there's ever a time when war is completely unjustified? I mean, right?
Completely unjustified? Right,
there are times when war is justified. We could have somebody in this room. I'm not sure who off the top of my head, but I'm sure there's somebody locally could come in and make an argument that war is never justified. Mm-hmm. Particularly some people coming from like a brethren kind of a background, very pacifist
right. Kind
of idea. They might say war is never justified.
Friends background, Quakers.
Right.
Do they say that about countries or just about
that Christians shouldn't be involved?
Shouldn't participate.
Well, I think in Anabaptist, for example, would say that they are not in favor of any war, but they can't really control what the government does. It's just, we're not going to fight.
Right. Okay.
So let me ask the question this way. Is it always wrong when countries engage in war?
No.
A war of offense or a war of defense?
Well, those terms can be kind of blurry, too. Because a lot of the current wars that are going on, both sides would consider them to be acting as self-defense.
Right.
I mean, we mentioned Israel and Hamas. If you ask the leader of Hamas, who's now dead, if you asked him before he was dead, are you fighting offense or defense? He would say defense.
Yeah.
I would say he's wrong and crazy for saying that, but he would say that. And obviously Netanyahu would also say he's fighting a defensive war. So.
Right.
Just because the countries believe or say that it's defensive doesn't make it defensive or offensive. So I don't know, but we got to define those terms, defense and offense, I guess. But I would say there's plenty of times when war would be justified. Not only justified, the reason I know that is because God has commanded war to be waged in many examples throughout the Bible. So if it never is justified, then God is immoral, and that we know is not true.
Yeah. Is it only justified if God commands it?
No.
Okay.
Is it only justified if it involves ancient Israel?
Many people would say that, right? That would be the Anabaptist argument, or I don't know as much about the brethren, but I have a lot more Anabaptist friends that they would say
only justified if it happens in the Old Testament.
Basically, God would never give such an order again. He only did it for Israel taking over Canaan, and he would never give such an order again. Therefore, we don't have to. We can just assume that all future wars are unjustified.
Now, let's say we'll use Ukraine and Russia because it's going to be less. Theologically charged than Israel, and
sure.
it's a little, not a whole lot, but a little cleaner to try to have that conversation.
Okay.
So, for the sake of argument, I'm going to put it out either way. Let's say that Russia was justified in feeling threatened by the maneuvers of NATO and them being threatened by military presence in Ukraine and their historical claim on that land being justified, and culturally there's some connections and stuff. Let's say that the Russians were right. Or, if you don't like that one, let's say the Ukrainians are right and they've been attacked by Russia, and they need to defend. Both of them could make an argument that their fisticuffs are justified.
Right.
So, are they? One or the other? Are one or the other or both of them justified? Or are both of them completely, there's no justification for anybody?
I think it's possible that neither is the answer.
In a specific conflict.
And also both.
In a specific conflict, I think it's sometimes going to be hard to make that, and every case is going to be different. You know, we get different people in the room, we all debate whether one specific conflict is justified. If you want to give like an overarching principle on when are conflicts justified, that might be better. I'm not sure. This kind of plays into you know, as a Christian, the practical implication, because I mean, none of us, well, in this room anyway, and probably most of our listeners, none of us have like a button to press to launch a nuclear missile at a country. So we're not the ones that are starting conflicts, but I would bet money that you don't have a nuclear weapon in your backyard. Yes,
that's correct. But yeah. The bet is.
Start a conflict? Oh, yeah, you definitely do.
I would also bet that if he did have a nuclear weapon in his backyard, he wouldn't tell you.
That's true.
I have words, I have fists. Right?
Yes, yes. So, but what I'm trying to say is, can we bring it back to a little bit more practical? What should a Christian do about conflicts that already are existing or going to be existing? I mean, we have a say in that we can vote, and if we get to positions of government, we could vote to have conflicts and so on. But for the broader listener that's joining in, they're gonna the practical application is, what do Christians do if you get drafted? What should you do? And who should your allegiance be? You know, one of the things that I've heard some people make a reasonable case that the Revolutionary War was not justified, biblically speaking, because it was an uprising against what people would consider the lawful government of the colonies at the time. If you subscribe to that, I'm not sure that I do, but if you subscribe to that theory, then at what point do you now, after the war, do you no longer have allegiance to Britain? Do you still pay taxes to Britain in 1792 or 1799 or 1810 or 1812 when the British came back and burned down the White House? Would he say, yes, great, my team's back in charge now for a week, and then pay their taxes there and then go back? When do you decide, you know, if China invades the U.S., at what point does it stop being the U.S. and start being China? And now, as Christians, you have to give allegiance to the lawful authority that's in place at that time. I don't know. And how do you continue to defend your home and property and your right. government? And you get drafted, and you know what? Those are, I think, a little more practical.
Well, you said you brought up home and property, right? And you're mm-hmm. you're actually bringing it down to, you know, the level of, you know, personal.
Sure.
You know, what is my personal responsibility over, you know, what is my domain or responsibility? And that's sort of what I was trying to do by saying, you know, like, I have words, I have fists.
Right.
And so the first question I ask is, like, is there ever a time when I need to use those? Right. Either to start a conflict or to resolve a conflict, you know, and I would say yes. And I think there are a lot of people who are true pacifists who would say no.
Yes.
But I'm pretty sure, you know, even if they're not using physical force for conflicts, that pacifists will participate in word conflicts.
Yes.
You know, even if they're
and they could be
polite,
very angry words,
polite
too.
And non-vulgar and. But it's there still is a struggle.
But it does rise to a very different level when there's killing involved. Mm-hmm. If it's not more than just blows being exchanged or harsh words, if somebody dies, now all of a sudden you have to decide, was this a justified death? Because if not,
well,
then that's murder.
My knuckles, you know, if I use them, right, they can sustain a lot of damage and pain. And destruction, mm-hmm. right? And I'm, you know, as the one who has authority over my body, right?
Your body, your choice? Is that what you're saying?
Well, I'm saying I'm responsible for what my body does,
okay.
right? Whether it's good or bad.
Right.
And so, so you know, and in the same way, I think, so, like, you sort of scale up on that, like, you know, like, they're, so death in the sense of, right, the destruction of something, the ending of, right, something that's alive.
I mean, if somebody actually dies, though, if you kill somebody, then that is a very different legal standard that's now going to be invoked.
Well, yes, if we're talking about, you know, a person on a person, but then when you go to, I'm thinking about, like, also, like, a nation is a body of people.
Okay.
Right? And so in that sense, like, there is, like, those who are responsible for that body mm-hmm. have to make decisions for that body, for the good of that body, right, is what they're supposed to do. And they'll be accountable for those decisions, whether in this life or the next.
Right.
So that's sort of where I'm going with.
So
with
there are wars of conquest and expansion, and there have been throughout history plenty of times where the leaders of the country would make no they would have no pretense that it was in response to aggression by their neighbor. They said, well, I just want more territory, and I'm going to take it because yeah. I'm stronger than you. And that has happened. Most of the conflicts that are in the world today, those are not the excuses being given by the leaders, but there have been many in the past where they said, mm-hmm. we just want to take over the next country because yeah. I'm stronger. And I think you might be able to make
it. Which would be like me, like, going to my neighbor and saying, hey, I'm stronger than you, so I'm going to take all your stuff because right. I want it.
Right. And so, you know, that you could, I think, make a decent case, biblically speaking, that that type of war would not be justified.
Right.
And I think because you can make a much easier case about that, that's probably why most of the quote-unquote civilized countries these days don't attempt to say that's why they're doing things, even if the real reason is oil or land or, you know, sex trafficking or whatever else. That we always have, you know, some kind of excuse. Well, we're saving these people or we're protecting from this other thing or whatever.
Yeah, that's the voice of Daniel Razvi. I also heard David Forsey. I'm Troy Skinner. This is the Faith Debate on News Radio 930 WFMD. And we are more than halfway through, and it occurs to me, we haven't made a whole lot of progress in the conversation, which I think is a point in the favor of the pacifists, because they have a very simple, consistent, they'd be done having this conversation, right? It's wrong. Period, full stop, done. Right? Don't wage war. Don't steal your neighbor's stuff. Don't use the knuckles on the hands that belong to your body to, you know, bludgeon somebody. Don't do those things. Mm-hmm. Turn the other cheek. You know, love, love, love. It's a very simple kind of an argument, and I think people might be attracted to just the simplicity. Like, I don't have to go through all these gray areas and these difficult things to try to figure out. Because we haven't made any ground. This has been a discussion for, I'm not beating us up for this, by the way. This has been a discussion for generations.
Sure.
So we're not going to solve this issue, but just us trying to enter into the conversation, figure it out. So why isn't simple better? Just say, you know what? War, bad. Shooting, no good.
Well,
death, avoid it.
We are sinful people, and we have an imperfect mind. And
speak for yourself.
A lot of things really just aren't black and white. You know, take lying, for example. Many Christians would instinctively say, oh, lying's bad. Okay, well then why was Rahab not only not punished, but in fact praised by God for her lie? So clearly, not all lies are bad. And that's one of the easiest things, you know. Have you ever lied? Okay, you've committed sins. Well, probably if you've lied, it was a sin. But there are lies that are not sins. And we know that because the Bible makes it very clear that at least a couple of specific lies were justified and correct. So that's just for lying. And that's one of the littlest sins you could think of. Oh, it's just a little lie. Well, everything from there is just going to get more and more complicated. There are some things that I would say are never okay, and the Bible does make those very clear. There doesn't ever seem to be an exception given against homosexuality, for example, or adultery or whatever. Although certain kinds of fornication are going to have certain remedies that are not death, right? You know, if you have, you could marry as a result of it rather than being killed for it, depending on the type and so on. So Where am I going with this? My point is that a lot of things, biblically speaking, a lot of theological things really aren't black and white, because the heart matters too, and the intent and the all of that, and our relationship with God. And then God's mysteries are not always easy to discover, you know? Just as we've talked about before, just understanding the Trinity is already a monumental task. So if you want a simple answer for everything, then I guess it's kind of like saying, well, I want to understand fully everything and every reason that God does things and God commands things. But if that's what you want, then you want a God that's not sovereign, that's not... I want a God that's bigger than me. I want a God that's big enough that I can't understand him or why he does everything. Because if I can understand it all, then he fits in my head, and then he's not my creator. I'm the creator.
Let's talk about some of the things that might make it more unjust. Civilians being killed by indiscriminate bombing of cities, let's say. Would that make it something that's not just?
Well, I think there's another piece there, too, which is... is the conflict itself justified, and then there are the methods
justified
or not? So I think that's in some ways kind of a different issue.
The whole idea of proportional response and stuff too. Right, because if I slap you, you might have the right to hit me back, but you probably don't have the right to shoot me, right? Just on a one-to-one basis.
Right.
But then if I pull out a gun, then you can shoot me, even if I haven't shot you yet. There's various legal standards, is my point.
Right, yeah.
So that's the whole proportional response, and that's what's being talked about a lot in the Middle East. And I think one of the reasons that it causes so much angst in the West is because we think about right and wrong as black and white. Everything, you're either guilty or you're innocent. There's no in between. Where in the East, nobody thinks of right and wrong that way. They think of degrees of honor or shame, and you're either more honorable or less honorable, and something you do affects the entire country, and it reflects on the entire country, but especially you and your family, and then your tribe, and then the nation. They don't really think of any particular action as being good or bad. It's only how does it make everything else perceived. And so that makes it really difficult when you have nations fighting that come from very different right and wrong worldviews.
Sure.
It's really impossible I was just talking with my family about this earlier today. I know you wanted to get away from Israel, but Israel is unique in that Israel is populated largely by people who were born in Europe and Russia. At least the last generation was, anyway. Yeah. Yet they live in the Middle East in amongst a whole bunch of people that are much more of an honor-shame culture. And they are more of a black and white type culture, which is, I think, one of the reasons why they attempt so strongly to warn people, get out of the way, you know, those types of things when they go in and bomb places, where nobody else in the Middle East does that. But again, on the subject of civilians, any time that somebody is dying who's, let's say, innocent, that's always going to be a tragedy. So you have two questions, though. One is it, even though it's sad, is it ultimately sinful or wrong? That's one question. The other question is, were they actually innocent? Because that's another, you know, another subject entirely. You know, people will say, what happens? There's a famous poem about when they came for the Jews in Germany. I don't remember at first they came for such and such, and I wasn't that, so I didn't say anything. Then they came for so-and-so, and I wasn't him, so I didn't say it. And then they came for me, and there was nobody left to say anything for me, right? So he's feeling responsibility. He should have stood up all those other times. So is there really ever an innocent civilian, then, if a country is ruled by evil leaders that are acting horribly, and there is an opportunity for the citizens to say, no, I'm not going along with this, we're going to stop you, but then they don't, do they not bear some responsibility? On the West, I think you can understand that to a degree. In the East, if you ask this question to anybody, Christian, Jew, Muslim, anybody who lives in Israel, in Pakistan, in India, in China, anywhere in the East, they would all immediately say, oh, of course, yes. What the person, he's totally responsible. I don't care if he pulled a trigger or not. He didn't do anything to stop it. And whether he could have done anything to stop it or not, his father or his brother or his uncle did this, and therefore it's his fault too.
So is that an argument against pacifism in the sense of by being a pacifist, you would argue that
you're actively causing some of that pain and suffering?
Because you're not stopping, yeah.
Could be. That's how I would explain it to a Westerner, but I think on a more basic level, whether you could have or should have or even did attempt to stop anything, you still bear responsibility for your family's actions and your tribe's actions.
Well, a couple of things I find interesting in the New Testament. One is soldiers go to John the Baptist, and he doesn't tell them to not be soldiers anymore.
He said, do what you're commanded to do or whatever.
Yeah, and don't treat people unfairly. Don't abuse your power, basically, right?
Mm-hmm.
And then we also have Paul saying that the government is there. They're there. There's a right way that they're supposed to be operating, but they're there in order to bear the sword.
And they were put there by God.
Right,
And people will say, well, he wrote that when Nero was the leader, so clearly he wasn't meaning that they're always, you can't use the excuse, well, my government's worse than that, you know, because that was a pretty bad leader.
All right, we're going to end it there, and we can pick up this conversation in next week's show. This is The Faith Debate. Thank you to Daniel Razvi, David Forcey. I'm Troy Skinner. Find us online at WFMD.com and householdoffaithinchrist.com. Till next week, 167 and a half hours from now, God bless.